Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal. Welcome to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack. And today our guest is Julie Hawley, and she is the founder of Three Keys Investments. She's invested in single family homes, house hacked, managed properties from over 1,000 miles away, and also passively invested across multifamily assets. And currently she's passively invested in nearly 300 doors. She's strategically partnered in 68 doors in Atlanta-based properties and is a general partner in 387 units. She's also the host of the Conscious Investor podcast herself. So be sure to say hi to her over there as well. So Julie, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy to be here. And I appreciate just your flexibility with scheduling. It's been amazing. And it speaks volumes about people. I think it's underrated that when people are gracious, like with scheduling, I feel like, man, that speaks volumes about who someone is. So I feel like I already came knowing a lot about you.
Well, we are glad to have you on the show today. So thank you for making the time. We definitely appreciate that. So Julie, can you share, you know, just a little bit more about your background and how did you get started with real estate?
Yeah, thank you so much. I've been raised in real estate, which is super fun. Third generation. However, I was divergent and discovered commercial real estate. And so I'm first generation and like the immigrant of commercial real estate from our family. I'm like, let's go to another land. And it's been really awesome. I started out house hacking, and that is really interesting. It was just one of those challenges that life presented. And the solution was rent out the room in the house so that you can make the mortgage payment. This is in my very early 20s. And there wasn't a name for it back then. It was just, you're renting a room in your house. Now it's all glamorous with like, oh, you're just house hacking. Like, that sounds way cooler. And I really appreciated that concept of, okay, wait, somebody's offsetting, you know, my mortgage payment. This is great. And then when my husband and I got married, we decided, you know, let's just slowly acquire single family houses. And then when we're ready to retire, we'll just have this little nest of single family houses and we'll just have passive income. And we said passive income, but we honestly were uneducated on the investing side of things. So we didn't actually know we were talking about passive income. So I'm inserting that into our conversation, really, which is kind of cute. And we thought we'll help people who are kind of caught in the fray of life, trying to get reestablished. We'll be the landlords, and we'll be able to help people make that transition. And so it's a little mix of investing with passion and, you know, purpose. And as we were doing that, ended up being a long distance landlord. So that was fun. And it worked really, really well. And we always had great residents. And then we had our daughter. And it just felt really, just felt very vulnerable. And in that vulnerability, that's when I looked to my husband and said, there has to be another way. There's got to be another way we can invest that is just a little more insulated from the risk of a one-to-one ratio. And I have a single family house. I have a single resident in there. And if they leave, now all my income is gone. It just felt like we were so exposed at a point when it's, we have a young family and we're trying to get ahead. And so he said, go for it. Do some research. We knew we wanted to invest in real estate. So that was a no-brainer. And listening and binging on podcasts, I heard the very first woman I'd ever heard on Bigger Pockets years ago, and that was Monique Holm. And she talked about house hacking, and she talked about, you know, syndication. And to me, that was just a complete conversion in my life. It was like, this is exactly what I was meant to do, like for investment strategy for my family, but also as a way I want to help other people. And since then, I've never deviated, and I doubled down, and I just keep moving ahead.
So what are you focused on today? Can you share a little bit more? Because you've transitioned and you've moved from single family to long-term rentals and then went into multifamily. And then what are you doing now?
So now we both know that they're in listener. I know you're aware of this also, shiny object syndrome. It's real. And it's so easy to think, oh, I just want to diversify my portfolio and I want to be invested in all these different asset classes. And yet we have to take a step back and we can't tackle it all at once. So initially I did start with apartment complexes. And then I started to get this shiny object syndrome. And in that process, it really led me to the reality that I want to be focused on housing for humans. That's where the heart is at. So currently we are continue to be focused on apartments. And then last year we brought assisted living into the portfolio for the first time. It was definitely the right time to do it. It was the right partner to do it with. And it was also that experience built up and accumulated over years on the apartment, the multifamily side, that really, I believe, helps support, you know, making a transition into the assisted living wing of things. Because there's a big difference between multifamily and assisted living. We're buying the real estate, so there's that element, but you're also purchasing a business. And it's a business that comes with a lot of care, and it needs to be done with care and approached in that way also. Lots of moving parts. So having that firm background in apartments really lent itself to making a transition into assisted living.
So why assisted living in particular, though? As you were looking and you had the shiny object syndrome, there are so many different ways that you could have gone down like short-term rentals or other avenues. So why assisted living at that particular time? Why did it make sense then?
Yeah, it makes sense then and it makes sense now because of what's taking place in that demographic. So when we're looking at the demographic of ownership of assisted living, I like to call them communities. Technically, they're facilities. It just sounds so sterile. So I am going to just refer to them as assisted living communities. As we look at the demographics of ownership, nearly 50% of ownership is held by ma and pas. And when we look at the demographics of the ma and pas, who own said 50% of that industry, they themselves are on that cusp of retirement. They're tired. They want to enjoy. They want to go relax. And so we're at this interesting confluence where there does need to be a changing of the guards and there does need to be a transition of ownership taking place. And unfortunately, there aren't enough skilled people ready to step into that ownership position. And so we're seeing that many of these facilities are being shut down. It's like, well, we don't want to sell it. We don't want to go through the hassle. And part of that on the owner's side of it is there's a lot of deep care and connection. They're not so far removed from the day-to-day operations that they don't have those relationships with their residents. And so it's easier for them to say, you know what, who knows who's going to buy this and if they're going to actually care for them. So let's just shut this down and then we don't have to worry about it. There could be a lot of other thinking that goes along with that, right? But it's really a special time to be able to say, we can come in here and we can create a very much winning situation for all people. We can allow you, the owner, to win and go and find rest and enjoy these beautiful years of your life. And we can have the residents win because we're going to take superior care of them. And we can have our workforce, they can win because we're going to take care of them as employees. The community is going to win. Our investors win. It's really one of those just beautiful circles where everybody can win in a really powerful way. And not to belabor it further, but when we look at housing, I know many of us are familiar with the housing crisis on the multifamily side of things or the single family side of life, but that is also mirrored in the assisted living space as well. So when we see that housing starts were down and they were impacted during the 08 recession and development came to a screeching halt and it slowly started picking back up. And then just as we're starting to get that, you know, like, okay, we're going to actually be on track to be, you know, filling the void that we need, you know, fixed, then now we have these interest rates that went up and development is on the decline once again, which is going to put a pinch in housing. This is also mirrored in the assisted living space. And so having people that can come in and purchase already running facilities so that these owners can go and retire, they can remain open, and potentially in many cases, we can actually add on to those and add more space for more residences.
So can you share a little bit about that first deal that got you into the assisted living space? How did it come about, the partnership? What made sense to you as well?
That partnership initially stemmed 2.5 years ago, probably almost 3 years ago, different phone calls with people who, you know, just those independent phone calls, watching them, not partnering at the time, but just knowing, okay, this is who you are, watching them over the years, seeing what's taking place. Ultimately, they reached out and said, hey, we've gone down this path. We're wondering if you would like to come along with us. So I hopped on a plane, flew out to Wisconsin, where they're investing in assisted living facilities, and was able to actually be part of the genesis moment of the acquisition that my company was part of. Sitting down with the owners and, you know, the key staff, the management team, and being able to just answer those questions. It was really an exciting moment to see. Actually, this is really interesting to see how they view those of us on the private investment side. And that concept of, well, you guys are this big company and you're coming and acquiring us. And to be able to calm that and say, yes, we're bringing our investors, but we're going to care for you and we're going to care for the residents. Like, we're not big corporate America. We're coming in with a different approach and we're going to care in a very substantial way. And by the way, I'm not anti-corporate America. There are a lot of really great companies out there that are very well run. So I just want to put that out there. In that time, looking at the operations, looking at, you know, all the key metrics and understanding what is our vacancy, what is the supply and demand. This is a more rural area of Wisconsin. So that can tend, you know, on one hand, you might think, uh-oh, what would happen? I mean, are you going to run out of demand because it is in a more rural location? That's where I actually live, in a rural area now, having grown up in California, in Denver, Colorado. It's interesting. I can see that actually rural markets need a lot of attention and focus and care. They have a lot of potential that is untapped. And so, you know, even taking some of that schema into the investment to say, no, I know this about other small markets. Let me test and see if that's true for this market as well. So we had the right team. We had the right management team. Purchasing it from the owners, we had the owners that were also coming in. We were buying $2 million below appraised value. So we were already coming in with a substantial amount of equity. And the financing that we were being in, the terms that we were able to move forward with, were also very favorable to ensuring protection of our investors' capital.
So what does it take once you identify a property, you put it under contract, you close it? What does it take to start operating an assisted living facility or community? And what are the things that are involved in turning it around, especially because you are working with the key staff now and you're trying to build up and rebuild this culture within?
Yeah, that I love that. There's so many moving parts. I am not on asset management and I'm not the lead person on that wing of things. However, I do have line of sight into that. And I'm so grateful, you know, for strong partners that know how to move forward in strength and efficiency. When we think about purchasing an apartment facility or complex, we think about, okay, well, we're going to have to swap these, you know, let's make sure the trash is swapped over. Let's make sure. And we have these like normal things that we are transitioning the ownership of. When we're purchasing and acquiring an assisted living community, 10x that, because now you have layers of healthcare that are involved. you have a lot more bureaucracy, and then you also have insurance companies, and you have a lot of paperwork that has to be streamlined. And so looking at the operations, what we have done, aside from, okay, well, let's transition, who has this license? Who is the owner? Because, I mean, you're not thinking about that with apartment complexes. You're not having any licenses to, you know, carry anything out. You're just able to execute. In this instance, I mean, okay, well, let's transfer the state license over into our name now. So there's a lot of transition of licenses. And then there's also the transition of how is this being run? And that's where there is a strong correlation with the apartment complex, and that is streamlining operations. That was one of the number one things that we did was, okay, let's look at how are we ordering? You know, what's going on with our food? Again, something you're not doing in apartment complexes, but we're doing this at scale when we're looking at, you know, five buildings. And so I was like, okay, well, how are we ordering food efficiently so that we are getting that cost savings? What kind of co-ops can we join so that we can get the best buying power? The medical supplies that we do need to have on site, how are we purchasing those? So there's a lot of insight and effort put into, okay, let's make sure our margins are strong on the things that we are going to have to purchase, and then moving those into more efficient operations. Then we just had a lot of paperwork that was all over the place. And so actually taking time to digitize all of that paperwork presents a substantial time savings, which is also therefore a dollar savings. And it's kind of interesting, small things like when we're looking at payroll and how payroll is executed and how people are clocking in for their shifts, there's all of that. I know we're going to be saving $5,000 to $8,000 just by changing our system and just optimizing it. So coming in and looking at that in a different way, again, you have an apartment complex and that's a great training ground because you learn some of the basics, some of the transitions, and then you move into assisted living communities and now it's just magnified, 10X, probably more like 100X.
So then from here, where do you see assisted living? Where do you see the market going into the future? And what will your next focus be?
The next 15 years for assisted living are strong. We have, 6 figures of baby boomers retiring every single day. And it's interesting because we're looking at the baby boomers, but that cusp, I love looking at just what's happening with the different demographics, right? But the cusp between the baby boomers and the very initial part of Gen Xers, it's an interesting little dovetail right there. And so we have a lot of people that are moving into these different years of life. And when you look at the statistics that 70%, let's put that, 70% of people will need assisted care at some point in their life. So we're not seeing a shortage on the horizon. So we're bullish on heading that into more assisted living communities as we move forward this year. They have to, meet a strong metrics in order for us to, hey, we're going to move forward with this.
So Julie, how has real estate investing impacted your life?
Wow. For me to be speechless is definitely a moment on the records. It's interesting. I just received an award recently and it really had me step back and look at how much real estate investing has impacted my life. And it has been a delineating factor in my life. And everything that I experienced to the point of transitioning into full-time commercial real estate investing has helped me. And they've all played a role. But I'm so grateful and I love the opportunity to serve and support people in taking their first or next steps in investing. It still brings me as much joy today as it did 5 years ago. Like, this is still just as much fun and exciting and rewarding. And the quality of life that I get to enjoy is fantastic. But knowing that I get to help others in their journey, it just makes it, that's really what makes it the sweet thing.
And what is the one thing you know now about real estate that you wish you knew when you first started?
Oh, goodness. Well, I wish in my 20s, when I was in residential real estate sales, I wish then that I would have known about syndication and all of that. But if I look now, I think that if I were to like just maybe give it like a piece of advice to myself, I'd say, don't be too timid, because I've lived through real estate cycles. And so it's made me, I understand the bull and the bear, and I want to end up on the right side and play nicely with both of them. And so sometimes that can lead to too much trepidation and too much like, okay, wait, let me just wait and let me pause. And definitely times to take that leap.
And what is the one thing that sets successful people apart in real estate investing?
They always invest. Successful investors invest in every single market because they are not driven by fear and they're not driven by interest rates. They're driven by, this is a team, these are the numbers, and this is a strong business plan. Let's go.
So Julie, where can our listeners find out more about you and what you're doing?
I would love for everyone to come check out the Conscious Investor podcast, and also head on over to IamAConsciousInvestor.com. Yes, it is an affirmation, because most people cannot spell conscious, even no matter what education level you have, it's tricky. So head over to IamAConsciousInvestor.com. You can learn about the podcast, about our investing. You can learn about coaching. You can learn about speaking. You can have access to the whole world there.
Awesome. Julie, thank you so much for all of your time today.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.